If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or in Clomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or in Clomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or in Clomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
All right, so are you ready to dive into some seriously mind-bending physics?
I think so.
You wanted to understand quantum mechanics better, right?
Yeah.
Particularly that whole idea about objects exploring all possible paths.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, we've got this video and transcript from a physics expert that breaks it down in a really cool way using something called action.
Action, huh?
Yeah, and it's not always covered in, like, traditional physics classes.
Yeah.
But it turns out to be super important in understanding how the quantum world works.
Okay.
So our mission today is to try and unpack this complex concept.
Sounds good.
And see how it connects to the familiar world we experience.
All right, I'm game.
Excellent. I think you'll be surprised by how intuitive it can be once we kind of break it down.
I hope so.
So the expert starts with this analogy about saving a friend in the water.
Okay.
Let's say they're struggling out in the ocean, right?
Hmm.
Do you run straight towards them the shortest distance?
Right.
Or is there maybe a faster way?
Oh, that's a great question, because it gets right to the heart of optimization. You might instinctively want to run straight to them.
Right.
But remember, you run much faster on sand than you swim in the water.
Oh, yeah.
So sprinting down the beach a bit first, then swimming a shorter distance might actually be quicker.
Right.
You know?
That makes total sense. It's like our brains are already doing these mini physics calculations without us even realizing it.
Yeah.
And this light does the same thing.
Really?
It somehow knows the fastest path.
Yeah.
Just like we do in that beach scenario.
Right. And for a long time, even physicists like myself assumed light just sets off in one direction and then adjusts as it encounters different mediums.
Right.
But there's a deeper principle at play here, and that's where action comes in.
Okay. So let's unpack action.
Okay.
It's a quantity that combines mass, velocity, and distance.
Yeah.
Right?
Got it. Okay.
Think of it as a measure of how much effort a particle expends as it moves along a path.
Okay.
And it's not a new idea either.
Right.
It was first proposed way back in the 1700s by a scientist named Maupertuis.
And later refined by Hamilton.
Okay.
Initially, it was just seen as a convenient alternative to Newton's laws.
Okay, so how did this concept of action become so central to quantum mechanics?
Well, it all started with a puzzle that had physicists scratching their heads in the late 1800s.
Okay.
Picture Germany. The era of emerging electric lighting.
Okay.
Light bulbs were the hot new tech.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
Okay.
And scientists were obsessed with understanding how to maximize their light output.
So they're trying to figure out how different materials emit light as they heat up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing this is where the black body comes in.
You're exactly right.
Okay.
To simplify things, they imagined a black body.
Okay.
A hypothetical object that absorbs all light and emits radiation perfectly based on its temperature.
So almost like a perfect absorber and emitter?
Precisely. Think of it like a hole in a metal cube.
Okay.
Any light entering the hole gets trapped inside, making it a perfect absorber and therefore a perfect emitter.
Okay, I'm following so far. So they're using this idealized black body to study how light is emitted.
Yeah.
And they run into a problem.
A big one.
Oh, no.
Classical physics, which worked so well for so many things, completely failed to predict the radiation emitted by these black bodies.
Mm.
The theory predicted an infinite amount of energy at short wavelengths.
Wow.
That's like saying a light bulb would release more energy than the sun.
It doesn't sound right.
Clearly something was fundamentally wrong.
So this is what they called the ultraviolet catastrophe, right?
Yes.
It was a major roadblock. So how did they resolve it? Enter Max Planck.
Exactly. Planck was wrestling with this problem for years, trying every approach imaginable, and nothing worked.
Oh, wow.
In a moment of desperation, he did something nobody had considered before.
What was that?
Classical physics said that the energy of an electromagnetic wave could take on any value.
Mm-hmm.
But Planck decided to try restricting it, allowing it only in multiples of a smallest possible amount, a quantum.
So he's saying energy isn't continuous,
right,
but comes in these discrete packets.
Yeah.
That's a huge shift in thinking.
It was a radical idea. And to connect this energy to the wave's frequency, he came up with the equation E8, where H is a constant.
And this H is what we now call Planck's constant, right?
Exactly.
But what does it have to do with action?
That's the amazing part.
Right.
It turns out that Planck's constant H has the units of action.
Really?
Planck realized that any change in nature might occur in multiples of this fundamental quantum of action.
Wow. So this seemingly simple idea of quantized energy had profound implications for understanding action at a fundamental level.
It did indeed. It was a hint that there was a deeper principle at play.
Yeah.
Something that connected energy frequency and this mysterious concept of action.
Okay.
And it wouldn't be long before young Albert Einstein would take this idea even further.
Okay, this is getting really interesting.
It is.
But before we move on to Einstein, I just want to make sure I understand the key takeaway here.
Sure.
Planck's work on black body radiation essentially revealed that energy isn't continuous, but exists in discrete packets.
Yes.
And this realization is intimately tied to the concept of action.
That's a fantastic summary. You've hit the nail on the head.
All right, I'm ready for Einstein. What did he do with his quantum idea?
Well, Einstein was never one to shy away from radical ideas. In 1905, he took Planck's quantum theory and ran with it, arguing that light itself exists in these discrete packets, which we now call photons.
Photons.
Each photon carries energy equal to HFF, Planck's constant times its frequency.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
It is.
Yeah.
So Einstein took Planck's idea of quantized energy and applied it to light itself.
Uh-huh.
That's a huge leap.
It is.
What made him think that light could be made of these individual packets of energy?
Well, Einstein was looking at something called the photoelectric effect, where light can knock electrons loose from a metal.
Okay.
But here's the catch. It only works if the light's frequency is high enough.
So it doesn't matter how bright the light is, how many waves are hitting the metal. If it's the wrong kind of light, nothing happens.
Exactly. It's like each photon. Each little packet of light needs a certain amount of energy to knock an electron loose.
Right.
And that energy, as Planck discovered, is directly related to the light's frequency.
Okay. I can see how that supports the idea of light being quantized, but what does all this have to do with atoms?
Well, a few years after Einstein's work on the photoelectric effect, a Danish physicist named Niels Bohr was wrestling with a different problem.
Okay.
The stability of atoms.
Right. If electrons are negatively charged particles orbiting a positively charged nucleus,
yes.
Why don't they just spiral inward and crash?
Exactly. Classical physics couldn't explain why atoms didn't collapse in on themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Bohr, inspired by Planck's quantum idea, proposed a radical solution.
Okay, I like where this is going.
What if the angular momentum of an electron in an atom could only exist in discrete values, multiples of Planck's constant divided by 2 pi?
Hold on. Angular momentum. Remind me what that is again.
Of course, angular momentum is a measure of an object's tendency to keep rotating for an electron orbiting a nucleus.
Right.
It depends on its speed and distance from the nucleus.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is the units of angular momentum are the same as action.
So Bohr was basically saying that action at the atomic level is quantized too. It can only come in specific chunks.
Exactly. And to represent Planck's constant divided by 2 pi, we use the symbol H bar.
H bar.
Bohr proposed that the electron's angular momentum could only be multiples of H bar.
Okay, but why would quantizing angular momentum solve the problem of atomic stability?
Well, think about it this way.
Okay.
If the electron's angular momentum can only take on specific values, that means it can only exist at specific distances from the nucleus.
Okay.
It's like there are only certain allowed orbits for the electron.
So the electron can't just gradually spiral inward because it has to jump between these allowed orbits.
Precisely. It's a bit like climbing a ladder. You can't stand between the rungs.
Right.
And this jumping between orbits is what explains how atoms emit and absorb light. When an electron jumps from a higher energy orbit to a lower one, the difference in energy is released as a photon of light.
And Bohr actually calculated these energy jumps and found they perfectly matched the observed spectrum of light emitted by hydrogen.
He did.
It was a huge victory for the idea of quantization, even if nobody fully understood why it worked.
Right. And that's where Louis de Broglie enters the scene with an even more radical idea.
Uh-oh.
He thought,
here we go.
If light, which we normally think of as a wave, can behave like a particle.
Right.
Why not the other way around? What if matter?
Okay.
things like electrons could behave like waves.
Wait, matter is waves.
I know.
That's mind-blowing. I thought waves were spread out.
Yeah.
And particles were... Well, particles.
It does seem counterintuitive, right?
It does.
But de Broglie proposed that every object,
wow,
even you and me, has a wavelength associated with it.
Really?
And this wavelength is determined by Planck's constant divided by the object's momentum.
Okay, but if everything has a wavelength, why don't we see people diffracting through doorways like light does?
That's a great question. The answer lies in the incredible smallness of Planck's constant for everyday objects like a baseball or a person.
Yeah.
The wavelength is so tiny, so incredibly minuscule that it's practically unmeasurable.
Okay.
But for tiny particles like electrons,
right,
the wavelength becomes significant.
So how does this wave nature of matter explain Bohr's quantized atom?
It provides a beautiful and intuitive explanation. Imagine the electron orbiting the nucleus not as a point particle, but as a wave.
So like a wave rippling around a central point.
Exactly. And just like a guitar string can only vibrate at certain frequencies to create standing waves.
Yeah.
An electron can only exist in orbits where its wave fits perfectly around the nucleus.
Okay.
It has to form a standing wave, a whole number of wavelengths fitting around the circumference of the orbit.
So Bohr's seemingly arbitrary quantization of angular momentum arises naturally from this wave nature of matter.
Yes.
It all starts to click into place.
It does.
And it leads to an even deeper understanding of one of the most iconic experiments in quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
The double slit experiment.
Exactly.
That's the one where you shine light through two slits and get an interference pattern on a screen.
Yes.
Showing that light acts like a wave.
Exactly. But it's actually much deeper than that. Ah. Richard Feynman, a brilliant physicist, took this experiment to the next level.
Okay.
He imagined adding more and more slits until the screen with slits essentially disappears.
Okay.
The math then forces you to consider every possible path a particle could take, not just through the slits, but through all of space.
Whoa, that's a lot of paths to consider.
It is. And this led Feynman to develop what we call the path integral formulation of quantum mechanics.
Oh, wow.
Instead of thinking about a particle taking a single defined path,
mm-hmm,
you consider the contribution of every conceivable path.
Right.
Even the seemingly absurd ones, to calculate the probability of a particle going from point A to point B.
So we're not just talking about waves interfering anymore.
Right.
We're talking about all these different paths interfering with each other.
That's right. Each path is assigned a phase related to the action along that path.
Okay.
As the particle traverses a path, its phase increases, and this phase determines the amplitude of the wave associated with that path.
Okay.
Now, Planck's constant, or h-bar, is incredibly tiny, remember?
Right. Incredibly tiny.
And that means the phase of macroscopic objects, like a baseball, changes incredibly rapidly as it moves.
Oh, wow.
For all practical purposes, the phases of most paths cancel each other out through destructive interference.
So they just disappear.
In a way, yeah.
Okay.
We only observe the paths where the phases align constructively interfering.
So it's like all these crazy paths are happening?
Yes.
But we only see the ones that reinforce each other.
Exactly. And here's the kicker.
Okay.
Those paths of constructive interference correspond to the paths of least action.
Wow.
It's the principle of least action governed by quantum mechanics that determines the paths we see in the classical world.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So even though we don't see it directly,
yeah,
everything is constantly exploring all these possibilities.
Yes. It's a mind-blowing concept.
It is.
And this principle of least action, this minimization of effort, is what shapes the reality we perceive.
Wow.
From the trajectory of a baseball to the orbits of planets.
Yeah.
It's all a delicate dance of quantum possibilities guided by this fundamental principle.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So in a way, our everyday world is built on this underlying quantum weirdness where things explore all paths.
It really is.
It's like the universe is always optimizing for efficiency.
It is.
But if everything is exploring all these paths,
yeah,
how do we actually see this happening?
Well, it's hard to directly observe these quantum effects for macroscopic objects.
Mm.
Remember, the wavelengths are so small that it's practically impossible.
Right.
But I actually have a demo that can visually demonstrate how manipulating these paths can reveal the underlying quantum reality.
Ooh, a demo. I love demos. Tell me more.
It involves a mirror, a light source, and a special piece of foil. This foil acts as a diffraction grating covered in thousands of tiny lines.
Okay.
By strategically covering portions of the mirror with this foil, We can actually manipulate the interference pattern of light reflecting off the mirror.
So you're saying you can make light reflect in directions it normally wouldn't?
Exactly. We can make the light take paths that seem impossible from a classical perspective, proving that it's really...
If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or enclomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.
Exploring all possible paths.
Wow.
We even did it with a laser.
Really?
By shining the laser next to the foil-covered mirror, we could make the laser beam reflect off the mirror, even though the laser was pointed in a completely different direction.
No way.
It's pretty mind-blowing to see it in action.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so we've gone from this everyday idea of finding the quickest way to rescue someone to this mind-blowing concept of objects exploring all possible paths.
Right.
But it all comes back to this idea of action being this underlying principle that governs everything.
Right. And it's not just some abstract mathematical tool. Action is fundamental.
Okay. Help me connect the dots here.
Sure.
How does action relate to the actual laws of physics that we use to describe the universe?
Well, the laws of physics can actually be derived from finding the correct Lagrangian,
okay,
which is a mathematical expression related to the action of a system.
So Lagrangian is like a blueprint for how a system will evolve over time.
Exactly. And this is what theoretical physicists are really searching for when they talk about a theory of everything.
A theory of everything?
They're looking for the ultimate Lagrangian.
Wow.
The one that can explain all the forces and particles in the universe.
So it's like a quest to find the deepest, most fundamental level of reality.
It is.
And the principle of least action is a key part of that journey.
It really is. It's this incredible idea that the universe at its core is always optimizing, always seeking the most efficient path, the path of least effort.
It's amazing to think that this seemingly simple idea of minimizing effort is woven into the fabric of reality.
It is.
So what does this all mean for us non-physicists? How should we think about the world differently after learning about action and quantum mechanics?
I think it encourages us to look beyond the surface of things.
Yeah.
We live in a world where objects seem to follow definite paths.
Right.
But beneath that apparent certainty, there's this incredible quantum dance of possibilities.
Wow.
Even a simple act like throwing a ball is at its core a symphony of quantum interactions guided by this principle of least action.
You know, it's like our intuition about the world is based on this classical view,
mm-hmm,
where things are predictable and follow a single path.
Yeah.
But quantum mechanics reveals this hidden layer of reality where things are far more complex and fascinating.
And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? The more we learn about the universe, the more we realize how much we still don't know.
I completely agree. So to wrap things up, I think the key takeaway here is that we live in a world where objects explore all paths guided by this principle of least action, but it's quantum mechanics that shakes the reality we perceive. It makes you wonder what other hidden actions might be shaping our reality that we haven't even discovered yet.
I love that thought. There's so much more to explore and uncover.
Right?
The universe is full of wonder, and the quest to understand it is never ending.
And that's what makes it so exciting.
Yeah.
So keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep diving deep. Who knows what other mind-blowing discoveries await us out there?
Definitely keep exploring.
All right, that's it for this deep dive into the world of quantum mechanics and the principle of least action.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Until next time, keep those brains buzzing.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so Einstein took Planck's idea of quantized energy and applied it to light itself. That's a huge leap. What made him think that light could be made of these individual packets of energy?
Well, Einstein was looking at something called the photoelectric effect, where light can knock electrons loose from a metal. But here's the catch. It only works if the light's frequency is high enough.
So it doesn't matter how bright the light is, how many waves are hitting the metal, if it's the wrong kind of light. nothing happens.
Exactly. It's like each photon, each little packet of light needs a certain amount of energy to knock an electron loose. And that energy, as Planck discovered, is directly related to the light's frequency.
Okay. I can see how that supports the idea of light being quantized. But what does all this have to do with atoms?
Well, a few years after Einstein's work on the photoelectric effect, a Danish physicist named Niels Bohr was wrestling with a different problem, the stability of atoms.
Right. If electrons are negatively charged particles orbiting a positively charged nucleus, why don't they just spiral inward and crash?
Exactly. Classical physics couldn't explain why atoms didn't collapse in on themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Bohr, inspired by Planck's quantum idea, proposed a radical solution.
Okay, I like where this is going.
What if the angular momentum of an electron in an atom could only exist in discrete values, multiples of Planck's constant divided by 2 pi?
Hold on. Angular momentum, remind me what that is again.
Of course, angular momentum is a measure of an object's tendency to keep rotating for an electron orbiting a nucleus. It depends on its speed and distance from the nucleus. And the interesting thing is, the units of angular momentum are the same as action.
So Bohr was basically saying that action at the atomic level is quantized too. It can only come in specific chunks.
Exactly. And to represent Planck's constant divided by 2 pi, we use the symbol h bar.
H bar. Okay.
Bohr proposed that the electron's angular momentum could only be multiples of h bar.
Okay. But why would quantizing angular momentum solve the problem of atomic stability?
Well, think about it this way. If the electron's angular momentum can only take on specific values, that means it can only exist at specific distances from the nucleus. It's like there are only certain allowed orbits for the electron.
So the electron can't just gradually spiral inward because it has to jump between these allowed orbits.
Precisely. It's a bit like climbing a ladder. You can't stand between the rungs. And this jumping between orbits is what explains how atoms emit and absorb light when an electron jumps from a higher energy orbit to a lower one. The difference in energy is released as a photon of light.
And Bohr actually calculated these energy jumps and found they perfectly matched the observed spectrum of light emitted by hydrogen.
He did.
It was a huge victory for the idea of quantization, even if nobody fully understood why it worked.
Right, and that's where Louis de Broglie enters the scene with an even more radical idea. He thought if light, which we normally think of as a wave, can behave like a particle, why not the other way around? What if matter, things like electrons, could behave like waves?
Wait, matter is waves. That's mind-blowing. I thought waves were spread out and particles were, well, particles.
It does seem counterintuitive, right? But de Broglie proposed that every object, even you and me, has a wavelength associated with it. And this wavelength is determined by Planck's constant divided by the object's momentum.
Okay, but if everything has a wavelength, why don't we see people diffracting through doorways like light does?
That's a great question. The answer lies in the incredible smallness of Planck's constant for everyday objects, like a baseball or a person. The wavelength is so tiny, so incredibly minuscule, that it's practically unmeasurable. But for tiny particles like electrons, the wavelength becomes significant.
So how does this wave nature of matter explain Bohr's quantized atom?
It provides a beautiful and intuitive explanation. Imagine the electron orbiting the nucleus, not as a point particle, but as a wave.
So like a wave rippling around a central point.
Exactly. And just like a guitar string can only vibrate at certain frequencies to create standing waves, an electron can only exist in orbits where its wave fits perfectly around the nucleus. It has to form a standing wave, a whole number of wavelengths fitting around the circumference of the orbit.
So Bohr's seemingly arbitrary quantization of angular momentum arises naturally from this wave nature of matter. It all starts to click into place.
Yes. And it leads to an even deeper understanding of one of the most iconic experiments in quantum mechanics, the double slit experiment.
Right. That's the one where you shine light through two slits and get an interference pattern on a screen showing that light acts like a wave.
Exactly. But it's actually much deeper than that. Richard Feynman, a brilliant physicist, took this experiment to the next level. He imagined adding more and more slits until the screen with slits essentially disappears. The math then forces you to consider every possible path the particle could take, not just through the slits, but through all of space.
Ooh, that's a lot of paths to consider.
It is, and this led Feynman to develop what we call the path integral formulation of quantum mechanics. Instead of thinking about a particle taking a single defined path, you consider the contribution of every conceivable path, even the seemingly absurd ones, to calculate the probability of a particle going from point A to point B.
So we're not just talking about waves interfering anymore. We're talking about all these different paths interfering with each other.
That's right. Each path is assigned a phase related to the action along that path. As the particle traverses a path, its phase increases, and this phase determines the amplitude of the wave associated with that path. Now, Planck's constant, or h-bar, is incredibly tiny, remember?
Right, incredibly tiny.
And that means the phase of macroscopic objects, like a baseball, changes incredibly rapidly as it moves, for all practical purposes. The phases of most paths cancel each other out through destructive interference.
Oh, they just disappear.
In a way, yeah, we only observe the paths where the phases align constructively interfering.
So it's like all these crazy paths are happening, but we only see the ones that reinforce each other.
Exactly. And here's the kicker. Those paths of constructive interference correspond to the paths of least action. It's the principle of least action governed by quantum mechanics that determines the paths we see in the classical world.
That's incredible. So even though we don't see it directly, everything is constantly exploring all these possibilities.
Yes, it's a mind-blowing concept. And this principle of least action, this minimization of effort, is what shapes the reality we perceive, from the trajectory of a baseball to the orbits of planets. It's all a delicate dance of quantum possibilities guided by this fundamental principle.
That's amazing. So in a way, our everyday world is built on this underlying quantum weirdness where things explore all paths. It's like the universe is always optimizing for efficiency. But if everything is exploring all these paths, how do we actually see this happening?
Well, it's hard to directly observe these quantum effects for macroscopic objects. Remember, the wavelengths are so small that it's practically impossible. But I actually have a demo that can visually demonstrate how manipulating these paths can reveal the underlying quantum reality.
Ooh, a demo. I love demos. Tell me more.
It involves a mirror, a light source, and a special piece of foil. This foil acts as a diffraction grating covered in thousands of tiny lines. By strategically covering portions of the mirror with this foil, we can actually manipulate the interference pattern of light reflecting off the mirror.
So you're saying you can make light reflect in directions it normally wouldn't?
Exactly. We can make the light take paths that seem impossible from a classical perspective, proving that it's really exploring all possible paths. We even did it with a laser. By shining the laser next to the foil-covered mirror, we could make the laser beam reflect off the mirror, even though the laser was pointed in a completely different direction. It's pretty mind-blowing to see it in action.
That laser demo sounds incredible. It's amazing how you can actually see these quantum effects in action with something as simple as a mirror and a piece of foil.
Yeah, it really highlights how, even though we don't perceive these quantum paths directly, they're always there, subtly shaping the world around us.
So we've gone from this everyday idea of finding the quickest way to rescue someone to this mind-blowing concept of objects exploring all possible paths. But it all comes back to this idea of action being this underlying principle that governs everything.
Right, and it's not just some abstract mathematical tool. Action is fundamental.
Okay, help me connect the dots here. How does action relate to the actual laws of physics that we use to describe the universe?
Well, the laws of physics can actually be derived from finding the correct Lagrangian, which is a mathematical expression related to the action of a system.
So the Lagrangian is like a blueprint for how a system will evolve over time.
Exactly. And this is what theoretical physicists are really searching for when they talk about a theory of everything.
A theory of everything.
They're looking for the ultimate Lagrangian, the one that can explain all the forces and particles in the universe.
So it's like a quest to find the deepest, most fundamental level of reality. And the principle of least action is a key part of that journey.
It really is. It's this incredible idea that the universe at its core is always optimizing, always seeking the most efficient path, the path of least effort.
It's amazing to think that this seemingly simple idea of minimizing effort is woven into the fabric of reality. So what does this all mean for us non-physicists? How should we think about the world differently after learning about action and quantum mechanics?
Well, I think it encourages us to look beyond the surface of things. We live in a world where objects seem to follow definite paths, but beneath that apparent certainty, there's this incredible quantum dance of possibilities. Even a simple act, like throwing a ball, is at its core a symphony of quantum interactions, guided by this principle of least action.
You know, it's like our intuition about the world is based on this classical view where things are predictable and follow a single path, but quantum mechanics reveals this hidden layer of reality where things are far more complex and fascinating.
And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? The more we learn about the universe, the more we realize how much we still don't know.
I completely agree. So to wrap things up, I think the key takeaway here is that we live in a world where objects explore all paths guided by this principle of least action. But it's quantum mechanics that shapes the reality we perceive. It makes you wonder what other hidden actions might be shaping our reality that we haven't even discovered yet.
I love that thought. There's so much more to explore and uncover. The universe is full of wonder, and the quest to understand it is never ending.
And that's what makes it so exciting. So keep questioning, keep exploring, and keep diving deep. Who knows what other mind-blowing discoveries await us out there?
Absolutely. Keep those brains buzzing.
All right, that's it for this deep dive into the world of quantum mechanics and the principle of least action. Thanks for listening.
It was a pleasure.
If you're paying more than $1 a month for any ED or hair medication, listen up. At Joy & Blokes, when you start TRT or enclomiphene, you can add any ED or hair loss prescription for just $1 a month. $1 add-ons with your hormone plan, and right now, all labs are 50% off. I'm Josh Whalen, founder of Joy & Blokes. I built this company because men are tired of paying for fragmented care without results. Every Joy & Blokes lab includes a visit with a licensed clinician who connects your symptoms to your biomarkers. You'll get a real plan that covers hormones, performance, and confidence. If you're considering TRT or enclomiphene, this is the most efficient way to do it. Get started at joyandblokes.com and use the promo code PODCAST. New customers get 50% off their labs, and for a limited time, you can take advantage of our $1 ED or hair loss add-ons when you start TRT or enclomiphene. Not available in all states. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Learn more at joyandblokes.com.